Blog Talk Radio.
It's too young to be on that bridge. It's too young to be sitting on the edge. Too young to be lonely. You're too young. Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, relationship healer, helping you heal all your relationships through love, author of the book Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me, and the romantic novel Love in the Blizzard of Life, available at Amazon, and I'm director of HealthyBabyBoomersNetwork.com, speaker, mentor, and seminar leader. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter how old you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who are proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. Today, I have the privilege of speaking with Dr. Charles Rawlings, former board-certified neurosurgeon for nearly 20 years and now specializing in medical malpractice. He is the author of a book, It Really Is That Complicated, a real-world examination of how men and women react differently to everyday situations. And I really can't wait to talk about this exciting topic. So welcome, Dr. Rawlings.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I really would like to know a little bit more about your background before we start. Like, you were a neurosurgeon. How does that lead to writing a book about relationships?
Interesting question. Yes, I was a neurosurgeon for about 20 years and was in private practice, then decided to go back to law school. Because I'd always enjoyed the law and it was intellectually stimulating. And so I then coupled that with my medical background and was doing medical malpractice. After my divorce, I started, I guess you could call it, quote, dating, although I'm not sure that's exactly what you would say in the mature age group. And I was finding that a lot of the relationships among adults were very, very complicated. And I was talking to a lot of my friends about them, particularly some of my female friends, and they were like, you know, instead of telling us about this, people need to know it. So why don't you go write a book about this and write a book about your experiences? And so as a professional, either a neurosurgeon or an attorney, you're always involved in people's relationships and the drama that is involved in the families and the care of the families and the couples. And so coupled with sort of my other experiences and a lot of advice and discussion with my friends, this is how the book developed.
Well, I'm really anxious to hear what you've discovered through all of this. Have you also asked other people about their experiences? Or has it been mostly your own?
They're mostly my own, but certainly other people have shared their experiences. And what I found very, I guess, exhilarating was when I was doing the book and had rough drafts of the various chapters, I would have friends and even not exactly strangers, but just people in everyday life, take a chapter and read it. And inevitably, they would come back and say, you know, I see my husband, my boyfriend, my girlfriend, whatever the case may be, the characteristics in that chapter. I see them in that chapter, and you are describing events and issues that are always there. Now, they may be under the surface, but they're always there, and no one really discusses them. And they think that this was a very interesting book.
So can you possibly give some examples of situations that you're talking about?
Sure. I mean, it's all pretty much laid out in the book. The first probably big issue that I've seen, and this is one of the quotations right on the front of the book, in a relationship, the one who holds the power is the person who cares the least.
I absolutely agree with that. I've seen it so often. One of the areas that I work in is sex therapy, and in a sexual relationship, the one who has the least interest does have the most power, and the other person keeps trying to force them to be more interested than they are.
Absolutely, and you can, it's the same principle, and you can extrapolate that principle to whatever issue you're discussing, be it financial, be it child rearing, purchasing of items for the house, purchasing a car, doing household chores. Any type of issue, any type of discussion, the person who cares the least is the one that has to be convinced, and the other person has to expend the energy to get the other person to agree. It's almost a universal truth.
But the problem is the person who cares the most assumes that the other person does care, you know, and they get angry and they go about it all wrong very often.
Absolutely. I was asked the other day, you know, how do you handle a situation, or does a couple handle a situation like this? And probably, as you know, you can go a couple ways. One, you can become, just like you were saying, pushy and angry and try and force the person, and that just sort of has the other person put up a wall. You can be passive-aggressive about it and just sort of be sneaky and do whatever it is that you care about behind the other person's back, figuring that if they find out, they're either going to not care or going to become angry and you'll deal with it then. Or, and probably the more evolved way to do this, is to open lines of communication and sit down and discuss with your partner or the other person exactly why it is that it's important to you, why you care a lot about this, why maybe they should care about this more, and just sit down and have a very rational, evolved discussion about whatever topic it is.
Well, there is another way also, and that is to back away and appear to care less so that it gets the other person caring more.
Absolutely. That's also a very interesting observation on your part. Many people don't see that. And I talk about that in the book, where if you would just say, you know, I don't care. Just, I don't care at all right now. We can do whatever. The other person may very well start caring more than the original person.
Well, I have another example that a couple is fighting and the wife wants the husband to go for therapy and she keeps asking and he refuses. But then she files for divorce. And suddenly, he wants to go for therapy.
There you go. Exactly.
Yeah, because she's backing away, and suddenly it does become important to him.
Right, right. And, there was another example that I can illustrate this with. It's a couple of male, you know, man and female, and they're not married, but they're living together, and the woman is going out more and more, not necessarily having an affair, but actually, you know, going out more and more and spending less and less time with the man. And the man is, you know, and to begin with, is trying to coerce her, trying to bribe her, trying to do anything he can to get her to spend more time at home or spend more time with him. And eventually, what he ends up doing is just exactly what you said. Is like he's like, okay, fine, I don't care anymore. You go out, you stay out, you do whatever, and I'll go do my thing. And all of a sudden, she comes back and says, you know, maybe I will spend more time with you, because he has suddenly developed not caring, and he has no interest. Absolutely.
So it's the opposite of what a lot of relationship therapists and coaches might say, you know, to communicate and open up and tell how much you care. Sometimes that is not the solution.
Absolutely. Sometimes, and this is sort of the passive-aggressive arm that I was talking about. Yeah, sometimes you have to do and play those type of games. Absolutely.
So you mentioned a term that I find interesting, that you use the term psychodynamic horrors. And I've worked with couples where I could see that happening, but I would love you to explain what you mean by that in marriage and relationships.
Sure. In any relationship, people bring their baggage with them from their past relationships, from their childhood, from their past lives, their past experiences. It's very difficult for them, not to bring it, and it's even more difficult for them to understand and realize what they're doing when they do react to their past experiences or traumas or whatever you want to get to. And when I talk about the psychodynamic horrors of a relationship, it's when both people bring in this baggage, these psychological traumas, and begin to act on these particular dynamics and these dramas. And it's like a bad play, basically. It's like a tragedy as both people go through their life and go through the relationship in sort of overacting and reenacting all of the past traumas and their past life and their past childhood with this other person. And this other person becomes almost a mirror for them to act out whatever it is that they need to act out. And the entire relationship eventually becomes a psychodynamic horror, a psychodynamic drama, where each person is reenacting their traumas and their childhood events.
I mean, there are cases where one person, I'm thinking in terms of abuse, but it can happen in any way, where you're used to abuse and you kind of believe that a strong, like a woman believing a strong man is abusive. So you might be involved with a really gentle guy and you keep pushing him and getting him angry and saying things to instigate him. It's that kind of thing. And if he already has those dynamics of rage and stuff from his childhood, it can really explode.
Absolutely, yes. And that's a really good example of what I'm talking about, where the person is reenacting whatever it is that they need, and you get these very different...
Or whatever they've seen. It may also be what they've seen in their childhood.
Yeah, absolutely, and it just all depends on what it is, and they get the other person to start reacting the way that is familiar to them, and it is definitely just a psychodynamic horror drama.
So I think something related to that is when you say that, well, we all know this also, that many females are attracted to bad boy types. So why would that be?
I have yet to totally figure that out. But it's inevitable that, and this goes along with women want what they can't have. And I saw this illustrated this weekend, and I hear it all the time, about the women who they think they want a stable relationship with a nice guy who understands them and will, for want of a better word, put them on a pedestal, treat them like a queen. And once they have that, they figure out that that's not what they want, or it's not that permutation that they want. And they want these, quote, bad boys who don't settle down, who are promiscuous, who don't call them. It's almost like a modern-day chase for them. Or they are actually scared to have a commitment to someone who is good. And if you look behind it, some of those folks have poor self-images, and they think from a subconsciously even that they just aren't, quote, good enough to have someone in their life who loves them or is committed to them. Or on the other hand, they may think, well, you know, I'm just this horrible person, my self-image is bad, and if he loves me, then there has to be something seriously wrong with him. And so, the other point is that a lot of women reject before they get rejected. And thus you sort of have this cycle of these women who chase these guys that will never commit to them. And they get past a certain age or at a certain point in their life, and they realize that, wow, most of these good people, these good guys have been taken. And you see it all the time.
I see another aspect to it. And when you're focused on someone who's giving you a hard time, he's not calling when you're expecting, and he promises things and then he breaks the promises, and he tells you good things and then he flirts with somebody else, you keep on wanting to win him over. So it takes your energy. You keep on focusing on, what can I do better? How can I reach him and get him? You don't have to look at yourself because you're so focused on him, and you call your friends and you're focused on, you know, worrying about him, being upset by him, as opposed to someone who's really good to you. I always say it's very hard to love someone who's good to you, because when they're really good and they're satisfying your basic needs and you feel secure and happy, then you start looking at them and you can find all their faults. Because now you're feeling secure, so then you look out and you see all the things that are wrong. You can't see that when you're trying to win the person over and he's making you feel bad about yourself. It's like a spiraling effect.
It is, absolutely. No question about it. And I think, and that's, it goes back to the psychodynamics, the psychodynamic horrors, because you just those bouncing back and forth, and I do this and she doesn't do that, or he doesn't do this, and it's a very crazy dynamic sometimes.
Well, what's really, really important for everybody is to look at yourself and develop your own sense of worthiness. And when you have that, then you can choose wisely. But
absolutely.
Isn't that easy.
I have another
statement that I really have to ask about. This one I know will get a lot of women get their ire up. They're like, all women are prostitutes.
Yeah, I couldn't wait for that. Well, it boils down to the fact that I kept that title knowing that it was going to be controversial, so that was part of it. And because several of my female friends were curious about the title, like, why would I use that? Don't you think that would put some people off? And it's more controversial than anything. And prostitution is used in that sense more broadly, because if you think about it, and this is, Most women in a relationship do not see it necessarily as a partnership, like a corporate partnership. They see it that, and they trade sex for this, for their security, for the monetary security, even as a wife. And you see this many, many times in second and third marriages, you know, like trophy wives, that type of relationship. But when you get down to it, and both males and females are prostitutes, because they sell themselves or sell something they have to gain some other type of advantage. And that's really what it boils down to more than anything.
So you're saying that people are selling something to be in a relationship?
Absolutely.
Yeah, many men will show how they can take care of her and they'll provide for her. But I've also seen a lot of women who are the providers. That's not talked about as much. That's kept a lot quieter.
Absolutely.
But it's that same kind of dynamic does go on.
I agree completely. Absolutely.
So, explain why you think relationships really are that complicated. You've mentioned a few aspects, but why?
Well, I said, when you're in a relationship, you have two people who have, we've discussed, brought different types of baggage, bring different experiences, different expectations, and different traumas into it. And they, first of all, don't probably know themselves like they should. And so it's difficult for them to become less egocentric and see the other person and begin to empathize with them. Once you throw this partnership, this duo, into the modern-day world with all of its issues and problems from a financial standpoint, a commitment standpoint, child-rearing, instant families, that sort of stuff, you have two different people being stressed by so many issues and have so many different backgrounds that it's always complicated. A relationship, a committed relationship, or even one that's not committed, is always complicated by these type of issues and by the person's past experiences.
And there's another factor in here. It's also someone's mindset, like what does that person believe about relationships? And you mentioned something a little earlier, that they're not creating it like a business. So I think of relationships as not so much a business but teamwork, that if you can become a team, the two of you, again, not against the world but handling the world together and having each other's back and supporting each other, if you both come into the relationship with that attitude, there's a really good chance that you can do well.
Absolutely, and that's part of what my book really emphasizes is a partnership. You call it teamwork. Some people call it, you know, a business aspect, a business proposition.
Well, people
whatever.
Sometimes they treat people in business a lot better than they treat their intimate partner.
That is true. Because they know they don't want to piss off their business partner. But absolutely. And, you know, you have to have the other person's back. You have to not disrespect them in public or even in private. You have to be evolved and have discussions about where the partnership is going and how you handle certain issues. And it is a mindset. I agree with you. One person may see a relationship totally different than the other person, and they're not going to be receiving what they need or perceive the way they should be perceiving the other person's gestures. And that also, just like you said, makes it even more complicated. Absolutely.
Well, one of the things about a relationship is that it's a place to learn and grow, but people don't look at it that way. They want the other person to do things their way, whatever that way is, financially, emotionally, with affection. They want it however, whatever is comfortable for me, that's what I want from the other person. But a relationship, I believe, it's more like what President Kennedy had said a long time ago. He said, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. So it's the same, ask not what your partner can do for you, but what you can do for your partner and for the relationship.
Oh, I think that's excellent, absolutely.
But not just in terms of giving and giving when the other person is not reciprocating. That's not doing something for the other person or for the relationship. It's really paying attention to what's happening, communicating, and sometimes even playing those little games of distancing to get their attention.
That's right.
It's very, very complicated. So you have several interesting quotes at the beginning of each chapter. Can you kind of share some of them?
Sure, absolutely.
And explain?
Yeah, there are a couple of them. I'm, as you might could tell, I have some interesting quotes in here. There's one that I think it starts the last chapter. It says, being deeply loved by someone gives you strength, while loving someone deeply gives you courage. And that's from Lao Tzu. And I think it's pretty self-evident that when someone loves you and is supporting you, that definitely gives you an inherent strength that strengthens your inner core. And then when you love someone, you've put yourself out there, and you feel strongly for this person, and that gives you courage as well. And another one that comes to mind just from what we were talking about is that life truly starts when you've reached the end of your comfort zone. And I think what happens there is you have to get past your old ways, your old ideas, your comfort zone, and that's when you can start living. And in your example, that's when you can start learning from the other person, is when you drop a lot of your predispositions, your past experiences, your past thoughts, and open up to the other person. And that way you can start beginning to live life and understand life itself.
Well, that's one of the things that people don't understand. They may look at couples that look comfortable together, and they want to be that comfortable, but they don't understand that there's a process to get to that level of comfort. And you can be thrown out of your comfort zone because the other person has a different way of thinking. They're viewing something different. It's work. It's a real work in process.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I wanted to respond to something else you said about loving someone gives you courage. And I'm picturing somebody, a woman, I'm just using a woman, but it can go both ways, a woman who's with a man who's so loving toward her that she feels stronger and stronger. And then she loses interest in him, and she feels like a false confidence that she's going to go out and meet other people and find somebody better. So sometimes it can build a false confidence when somebody loves you.
Yeah, in the person that's loved, absolutely.
Right, but when you love someone, and loving someone is not like having an obsession with them and passion for them. Loving someone is really caring about how that person is doing, even if it hurts you. Like loving your child and letting them move to another city. Because it's good for that child. Loving them is not like forcing them to stay in the same town because you love them so much. That's the example
right.
I thought of.
Right. No, absolutely. Especially if it's not in their best interest or if they don't want to do that. Absolutely.
So people need to learn. It gives you a lot of courage when you finally are able to love, really love another person.
I agree completely.
It takes courage. You know, you may love someone where your friends say, why are you spending time with this person? But you love them. So why don't you tell us why someone should read your book and how they can get in touch with you to purchase the book?
Sure. Why they should read it? Well, it is designed for folks in relationships, and that pretty much covers everyone that is listening and everyone that is out in the real world. It provides interesting ideas. It opens your mind up. It gives some advice. And more importantly, like I said earlier, almost everyone is going to be able to see some experience, some situation that they've been in, and it's going to give answers to some of the questions. As for being able to purchase it, you can get it at Barnes & Noble. It's on Amazon. You can go to my websites, which are www.charlesrawlings.com or www.itreallyisthatcomplicatedbook.com. Order it from there. You can order it from the publisher, Author House. Google it. You can't miss it. It always comes up.
Well, Dr. Rawlings, I want to thank you so much for coming on this show and sharing your wisdom.
Well, thank you. It's been a real pleasure, and I appreciate it.
So I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, saying goodbye for now. Please visit my website, healthybabyboomersnetwork.com, to get your free report, How to Live to 100 and Beyond. And please stop by Amazon.com, put in my name in the search, and get a copy of one of my loving, healing Kindle books or ebooks.